The scripture reading this morning is Matthew 20, verses 1 through 15. As this is the gospel, would you please rise, if you are able. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. He said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" And they said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard." Now when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now when the first came, remember they were last to get paid, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us, who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to the last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous?" The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. You may be seated.
Well, good morning. It is good to be with you all on a deceptive spring day. So despite the snow and the cold, it is wonderful to be in a room full of warm faces. Well, over this past week, I happened to find myself in study mode for today's message, and we are continuing in a sermon series entitled The Good and Beautiful God. And so I began to think about these images that I might have of God. What does God look like? What is God's character like? What does God do on like a daily basis? What are God's activities? And I thought, you know what? If I'm thinking thoughts like this, I bet somebody out here is going to be thinking thoughts like that as well. So I decided to employ some experts to help us out with that question today. And we have a little bit of a video from some experts that's going to help share with us this morning what God might be like.
Please welcome to the stage our guests for tonight, Leilani, Chad, and Michael.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good.
Do you guys know what the topic of tonight's show is?
No.
Religion. Do you all know what religion is?
I think I need to be in fourth grade to hear that.
You've heard of it?
Well, I heard some people said that God created the world.
Okay. There we go. That's kind of religion.
Oh, she just reminded me of something. Okay. Like, but God didn't create the world. It's like a little star. Like there were stuff coming inside it, and then it like
exploded.
Created.
The Big Bang. Show.
It exploded, and then it created the world.
So, in your mind, if God is around us, what does God look like?
She has a little, like, golden ring around her head.
Okay. I like that. I'll accept that. What do you think, Chad?
I usually get all the stuff from the Bible, so. He wears white. He has a golden ring around his head, and
Her kind of, or his. It might be a girl or it might be a boy.
Pretty sure it's a boy.
What do you think God looks like?
I think he has a beard.
He has a beard? Like a long beard. What color?
White.
A white beard?
Yeah. Then he would be old.
White clothes? If they say that God created Earth, or God created the star, or God created man, who created God?
Oh.
Yes?
God created himself.
Well, that's a conundrum. So, what kind of personality does God have?
A really, 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 really nice one.
A nice one? Yeah. Okay.
I think creating the world one.
So he just has a kind of creating the world kind of personality.
Yeah.
I get that, yeah. Okay. What do you think? What kind of personality?
I think he's probably exhausted.
He's probably exhausted. I think he probably is.
Well, God's schedule is, I'm quite sure, much busier than mine, so I can't imagine. God's got to be exhausted, right? You know, as we struggle sometimes with our images of God, I recognize that we really kind of bring a composite understanding of what God is like. We bring to this understanding the things that we have been taught and heard as a child. We bring to this understanding the experiences of our lives. Sometimes we bring to this understanding an interaction with biblical text or from what other people have told us. But you know, the real truth of this is that we don't always have positive images of God. And sometimes we bring to our understanding concepts of earning and deserving, don't we? Because we've heard so many times that you get what you work for and you deserve what you get. And sometimes those concepts happen to work their way into an understanding of God. But there's a danger when we apply that understanding to the concept of God and God's grace. Now, you might say, now, Pastor Anna, I have read a little bit of the biblical text, and I know that there are some stories that would support that claim of earning and deserving. For if you look in the biblical text, yes, we do see that the Israelites, for example, were punished, and they were sent into exile. And then there is a New Testament question even, when the crowd presented to Jesus a blind man and they said, who caused this blindness? Who sinned? However, there is a terrible danger when we over-focus on these small examples of biblical text or witness. And that danger is that we will take those in and we will develop a false narrative that blinds us to the truth of the larger message. Because you see, the larger message of the biblical witness is that it is like a tapestry, a massive tapestry that is filled with grace and unmerited generosity of God. You know, those same Israelites, for example, they were a people that were chosen by God for no apparent reason. And those same people were delivered from slavery. They were delivered from poverty, and they were empowered to take on new adventure and to live a free life. Or it might be someone in the text who was in a time of complete male domination. There was a woman named Deborah who was a judge and a ruler for her group. So these examples of God's generosity, these examples of God's unmerited favor, of God's almost seemingly arbitrary selection of someone, run from cover to cover of the biblical witness. And you know, if we're really honest, and if I were to sit down and have coffee with you today, I would imagine that some of you would tell me of times in your life when you experienced God's grace, when you experienced God's generosity, when you had a time in your life when you didn't know how ends were going to be met, but God brought it all together. So yes, there are stories that might seem to undergird this thought of earning, these thoughts of deserving, these concepts. But friends, that is not the biblical witness, and that's not the totality of the picture. I'm reminded of a tapestry that I've had for many years. And over the years, that tapestry has traveled with me from home to home. And at one time, that tapestry hung in a dining room. The walls were painted kind of a tomato red. And on that backdrop of red, the colors that you saw vividly in that tapestry, the ones that popped right out at you, were colors of brown and colors of gold. But later, when I moved into another home, the tapestry was moved into a living room where the walls were wheat color. And the colors that popped out there were not the gold, not the brown, but the green of the tapestry really showed through on that wall. And you know, it would be sad if I were to take a thread of that tapestry and say, this is what this tapestry is about, gold, green, brown. When in reality, the tapestry is a composite of all of those colors, all of those threads, and it makes up a picture of a tree of abundant life. You see, when we bring into our concept of God's grace as being a totality of our lives, not just one singular incident, but the whole of it, then we begin to see a truer image of who God is. Sometimes we might consult the Psalms to get a picture of what the psalmist thought God looked like. And in the psalm, I am struck by a Hebrew word that is used 147 times to tell us what the image of God looks like. It is a Hebrew word, hesed, which means loving kindness. And some biblical translations will translate the Hebrew word hesed into steadfast love. It means a love that is strong, that is stable, that is secure. It means a loving kindness that will envelop your life. And when the psalmist sat down and decided to extol God's grace and virtue, when the psalmist decided to tell us what God looks like, the psalmist used the word hesed. It is a powerful reminder. Now, James Bryan Smith tells a little bit about the danger of taking a look at some isolated passages or having a small view, if you will, of God. He says that isolated passages must not rise beyond their place in the larger narrative. It would be like me looking at that tapestry and seeing only one thing. But James goes on to tell us that the dominant narrative of the biblical story is a story of unearned grace, of a God whose love is not thwarted by human sinfulness, and of a Christ who dies for sinners. The minor narratives are only a part of the ambiguity of all epic narratives. You see, my friends, if we dwell too long on those singular incidents, if we dwell too long on the minor narratives, then we run the risk of majoring in the minors. We run the risk of allowing them to render a false narrative of the entire text. And I wonder what kinds of false narratives, what kinds of things that might be rooted in half-truths that we carry around in our lives. And I wonder if maybe we don't get them early in life through parenting, or perhaps we pass them on when we parent others. In other words, it might go something like this. If you are going to have your allowance, then you have to do all of your chores. Perhaps it goes something like this. You'll get a gold star if you pick up all of your clothes in your bedroom. Or perhaps we get these narratives of earning and deserving. They're reinforced when we enter an educational system, and certainly when we are in the professional world. How many of us have stayed late to work on a project so that we could earn a promotion? How many of us have fallen into the trap of saying, well, I guess he didn't get it because he didn't deserve it. But unfortunately, if we take these concepts of earning and deserving and we begin to apply them to an understanding of God, and we begin to paint an image of God that functions in that way, then we have missed the mark, because God does not operate like that. God does not deal in earning and deserving. You see, other false narratives we threaten in our lives to actually embody. They become a part of who we are. Sometimes they might go like this. Busyness equals production. Busyness equals production. But how many of us know that you can be really, really, really busy and actually not accomplish anything? Or how about a narrative that says stubbornness equals strength? You know, if I just stand by my position long enough, then they're going to come to my side. But how many of us know that sometimes true strength lies in an ability to compromise? True strength lies in an ability to be able to hear the person next to us with open ears. Or how about yet a true danger when we think that perfection equals worthiness? Perfection equals worthiness. How many of us embody that idea that I've got to look a certain way to be worthy to be loved? I have to do certain things perfectly in order to deserve or to be worthy of someone's attention or worthy of a particular position or show that my life means something. Friends, these are human constructs, and these are not the ways in which God acts. These are false narratives, and they are a true impediment to God's grace. For if we buy in to that narrative, if we are one of those persons who has embodied thoughts and feelings like that, then we might also find ourselves thinking, well, how could anyone, let alone God, love us? How could anyone, let alone a God who is perfect, somehow love someone so imperfect like me? You see, no matter how great our accomplishments, no matter how many our achievements, at some point when the lights go out at night and there's no one there to talk to, we know inside that we haven't earned God's love. We know inside that we really don't deserve it. And so, if that is who we are, if we are that person on this morning, then I'm going to suggest to you that perhaps the real problem isn't the image that we hold of God, but it's the one that we're holding of ourselves. And so today, a reimagining might be in order. You see, I'm reminded of my nephew, Clifton. He's only 3 years younger than I am, so don't think nephew, think nephew. Well, there was one time a number of years ago when Clifton was going through a transition in life. And so I said, you know what? Clifton, you can come and stay in my home. And I don't know if you have had a roommate before, but if when you enter into that roommate agreement, there's a period when you're going, this is going to be great. And then they show up. And this was kind of the same thing with Clifton. I'm thinking, this is going to be great. You know, Clifton and I will be able to connect like we did when we were kids. Clifton loves to work with wood. He loves to work with old things. I have an old house. Maybe we could get the two together. You know, I'm thinking this is going to be fantastic. Well, until Clifton shows up. And Clifton shows up with trucks, moving Clifton's stuff into the house. And I'm thinking he's going to have a bedroom, but instead he has a bedroom in the basement and the garage, and there's all of this Clifton stuff in the house. Well, now, if that wasn't bad enough, Clifton likes to go out on Saturday mornings and drive his little pickup around town and find some cast-offs to bring home, as if he didn't have enough already. And so he brings home one day this extremely long, very heavy piece of equipment. He calls it a lathe, and I'm like, that is so not pretty. And then another time he brings home a broken three-legged chair, and I mean, the list just goes on. And eventually, I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking, you know what? I'm thinking to myself, this guy has got to stop it. We're going to end up with this house where there's like a couch on the front porch and a broken washing machine in the yard. This has got to come to a stop. And about the time I think that, then Clifton comes home with another thing and he's like, look, Anna, look at this. Isn't this great? And it's a broken radio. It's like from 1932, and there's a chip out of the side, and the knobs are off the front, and the veneer is peeling, and it is so not pretty. And about the time that I'm thinking, okay, I've had it, and I'm about to give him his speech, I see the look on his face, and he's like, he's delighted. So that little pause gives him enough time to squirrel off down to the basement. And I'm mystified. Well, a couple of weeks later, I happen to go down to the basement to do some laundry. And there's the workbench. And on the workbench is the radio that he's taken apart. And the shell of the wood is apart, and he has taken veneer and he has glued it to one side of that shell. And it's held on with little clamps. And then on the table, there is a new screen that he has taken and cut to the size to fit the front of the radio where the old one was frayed and damaged. And then further down the workbench, I see that he's testing some stain on some other pieces of veneer. And while I'm standing there looking at the workbench, and I'm looking at all of these parts of this radio laid out so carefully, I begin to think, you know, this is exactly how God dealt with me. I was someone like that. I was someone that God came and found me in all of my mess and began to take me apart and then carefully put me back together again. You see, this is the kind of image that we should be holding of God. one that seeks us, one that pursues us, one that delights in us, no matter our condition. No matter how many times we have been broken, no matter how many times we've messed up, no matter what we've done, no matter what we've thought, no matter what we've said, no matter how many times we got it wrong, yet this is a God that delights in us, a God that comes to find us, that seeks us wherever we are. Whether it's the classroom or the boardroom, or whether it is in family time, or whether it's the time that we were in the car all by ourselves, this is the God that comes to find us in all of our humanness and picks us up and says, I delight in you. Friends, yes, God came to save us from sin. But God also came to make us whole. God came to restore us. This isn't just a God of punitive damage. This is a God that comes to make you whole so that you might participate with God in God's glorious plan. Yes, a reimagining is sometimes in order. For God desires to heal you. God desires to complete you. God desires and longs to be near you. So whether you have been discarded or whether you feel you have been discounted, whether society has shoved you out or taken you in, or whether you have been that person who has been doing the judging, this is a God that longs to love you into wholeness. There is a verse in 1 John that I believe kind of sums up this image of God. It reads, this is the kind of love that we are talking about. Not that we once upon a time loved God, but that he loved us, and that he sent his son as a sacrifice to clear away our sin and the damage they've done to our relationship with God. You see, this is a God that loves us and sent his son. Perhaps much like Clifton, driving around on that Saturday morning, meandering through the city to find something that to someone else would look like a worthless piece of junk. And yet, like Clifton, says, I delight in you. I delight in you. There is a hymn that is one of my favorites, and it captures it a bit like this. It says, the King of love my shepherd is, whose goodness faileth never. I nothing lack if I am his, and he is mine forever. For perverse and foolish oft I strayed, but yet in love he sought me, and on his shoulder gently laid, and home rejoicing brought me. Yes, this is a God who wants to bring you home, who wants to bring you home rejoicing that you are his. And so today, if you are struggling with images of God and what God might look like or what God's character really is, if you are struggling at a period of time where you are not feeling the generosity of God, then I would invite you to work with me this week in a soul training exercise where we take a look together at Psalm 23. I know for many of us in this room, this is a very, very familiar passage. It's so familiar, in fact, we tend to kind of buzz right on through it. We've memorized it, many of us. But I would invite you this week to consider it, perhaps meditatively, line by line. Consider it slowly. And initially, that might be uncomfortable, especially if you're used to running right through the psalm. But maybe we could work on the first stanza together today. Line one reads, "The Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want." Can you consider for a moment those times in which God was your shepherd, in which God guided you? That unseen hand, God guiding you. And those times in which you went without a real need, you did not want. Or perhaps, "He makes me to lie down in green pastures." Pastures that had been provided for you. Areas of your life where you were given just simply to enjoy the beauty of nature. The beauty of something that you never asked for. The next line reads, "He leads me beside still waters." I would invite you at this point to consider those times of your life that have been stressed, those times that have been troubled, those times that have been uncertain, and yet God undergirding you with peace, God continuing to invite you into areas of peace, of safety, of surety. Rest in that. And finally, "He restores my soul." Yes, this is a God that wants to restore our soul. Today, I would invite you to invite that in. Invite that restoration. Unafraid, unashamed, presenting yourself before this God who is so generous and who simply longs to be near you in all of your life's journey. Amen.